Hello, you're listening to Heavy Set Go, and this is Jeff Crenshaw. I am at Mr. Theater. Very nice of them to let us record in here. Ben couldn't come. He went and got bronchitis. At least that's the excuse he's using. I'm really sick, Jeff. I sure wish I could be there, but I got bronchitis. I just can't come. Alan Burrell blew his tranny, so he's not able to come out.
You can't say that kind of stuff anymore.
Well, no, I'm in transmission.
Oh, okay. He blew his tranny? That is not PC, bro.
I gotcha. Well, he screwed up his transmission on a car that he only owned for like 3 days beforehand, so he's stuck out in Happy Valley. I know what he's thinking right now. My life is hell!
Yeah.
Stop making fun of me!
I'll blow my tranny anytime I want.
Faster, Alan. Anyway.
You're going nowhere.
I'm with a couple of gentlemen. One has been here before. The proprietor of Mr. Theater. He directed a stage. No, he didn't direct. He was a star of the stage adaptation of Tommy Wiseau's The Room. He, as Tommy Wiseau, or as Johnny, I should say, but honestly, what difference does it make when you think of you don't think of Johnny, you think of, there's Tommy Wiseau.
It's a great movie, it's a good time, and everybody come here, we love, it's all about love, you know, everybody come together, and you walk away, and everybody's happy. You know, love each other, don't hate, don't do drugs. Okay, bye.
I've met the real Tommy Wiseau 4 times, and if I close my eyes, I can honestly imagine that being him. The other guy, the laugher, you might call him, is a legend around here, a man of many talents, man of many faces. He's played Alice Cooper, as has Montetre, in the same play.
It's like I'm looking in a mirror.
Yes.
I'm bleeding from the eyes!
You've been Shatner, you've been Rod Serling, you've been all kinds of different parts. You're like a shapeshifter of sorts.
Thank you.
So, welcome.
Thank you.
Dylan Hillerman and Montetre.
Thank you.
It's good to be here on Heavy Set Go.
I like being in this theater.
It's an accomplishment for you, man.
It is one of those. It has that going for it.
You're telling us how you, how long did it take for you to get all these seats out of the old theater?
12 to 14 hours straight. We drive to Salem, but we had to get them out that same time, you know?
And I see you have some leftover seats up there. They were $2 each. Do you mind if I ask how much you spent on the seats total?
Oh, I think we got everything with some sconces for like $225 and maybe less than $250.
Damn.
And you know, then also the rental of the U-Haul, and you know, and then this place to get it, we had to pay like the first and last month, like as a, you know, so it was a huge upfront fee for this, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And then, but the seats normally would cost $250, so I did the price, and we saved like $20,000 or more.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think you almost have to be, especially modern Portland, the way it's been going, you have to be almost crazy to open a theater.
Yeah, or crazy, or both.
It helps.
What made you want to?
Ryan, my co-partner in this, co-business owner, him and Jeanette Trexler also, but it was Ryan and I talked, we were going to do The Room on stage,
mm-hmm.
and we were going to do other places, and inevitably... we looked at this, he saw this spot online, it was empty, his warehouse, and we're like, oh, let's go over there, just check it out. And I saw the parking lot, and I'd seen the pictures, it was just empty, and it was really empty. And I thought, man, this is going to cost 5 times as much, you know? As opposed to just biting the bullet and doing it at somebody's playhouse. So we decided to just do it, just go for it. And that was it. He's like, you want to just do the theater? I'm like, look at this parking lot. Like, yes, yes, yes. And so, I mean, it came along really quickly.
You're doing a show here, aren't you, Dylan? Or
No, I'm not doing a stage play this year.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm going to be. I'm helping with one, but it's not happening at this space.
Aren't you bringing back Shock Opera, your Alice Cooper play?
Yes, we're doing that. Oh God, I forgot we are doing a stage play. What the fuck am I?
But we've already done it. We're just going to make it a little better.
True. You know? Yeah.
You're going to add.
Well, when we first did it, somebody dropped out.
Oh, who dropped
the
out?
The character.
One of the members of the Alice Cooper group. Or one of the actors who played one of the original members of the Alice Cooper group dropped out about a month, 3 weeks before we went up.
Was that after you shot the video sequences?
Yes.
So pissed.
Yeah, we did do it, and I purposely do my video sequences early just for just such a occasion.
Now describe chaos. The describe the layout of the show, like how the show runs, so people can kind of contextualize what we're talking about.
Okay, well, the play's called Shock Opera, and it's about Alice Cooper, and the original title is Shock Opera, : The Unauthorized Alice Cooper Story. And we've taken out the UN, and I'll tell you why later. But first off, the idea came, I don't know when it came to me exactly, it was a long time ago, but I think conversation just sort of crystallized it. Watched some documentaries, bought some books, started writing scenes, and based on other plays I'd done, I wanted to sort of like, the play I'd directed previously was written by someone else, and the one that I had written before that was just one room, no scene changes. I wanted it to be different. I wanted it to be like a movie, you know, so there's about 40 plus scenes, including a little bit of videos. There's a multimedia element. There's some dance routines. And I tried to do as much research as I could so I could give you the impression that you understand a little bit more about a rock band that I don't think gets enough credit in terms of rock and roll history and their influence that they have. And it's just, you know, a performer that his music is something that I've been listening to most of my life, and I just thought it was like a kind of of all the bands. I actually thought originally about doing it about Devo, and I discovered that the band was actually fighting, and which is the opposite situation with the Alice Cooper band. They were kind of coming together in the last few years, and so the timing was perfect because the day we finished auditions, the original Alice Cooper band officially announced on the internet that they were back together and recording.
Wow.
First time since 1974.
Wow.
So, and that's when my parents divorced, so it was like a cool, nice, wraparound. Like, hey, things are going well for me too, yay! So the band's back together.
So are your parents like, oh, we're going to remarry?
Oh, no. I just meant, I was happier. I was happier than I've ever been since 1974 is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I found myself in a place with a really amazing girlfriend and my producer, Julia Arg.
Same person.
Yeah, same person.
I've seen her like tagged in your posts before, and I've never figured out how she pronounces her last name.
Oh,
you know what it looks like to me?
What?
It looks like that thing that the word that appears in Charlie Brown's speech bubble after he loses all the football away.
Yeah.
Ah!
I think. I think what it came from, and I understood it later. At first, I didn't. I thought it just meant, like a monster sound because we were working at a haunted house and we met. But her last initial is R, and I think it was more of a pirate thing.
Oh, I gotcha.
But, you know, it could be interpreted in any way you would desire.
I dig it.
Mm-hmm.
She was the nurse, wasn't she? The spooky Alice Cooper nurse?
Yeah, correct. The one with the peg leg and the one eye.
Yeah,
pirate, yeah, no.
Yeah, she's terrifying.
No, she was. Yeah. So why was it? Did you say why it was now unauthorized?
Oh, please tell.
Oh, okay. We initially produced and mounted the play and performed it at the Funhouse for a weekend, and a stretch of four shows.
I think it was. Was it two weekends, or was it just one weekend?
It was just one. Plan 10 was two weekends.
That's right.
But ours is a shorter run, and. We wanted to do it one more time before the end of the year and decided that we would do it in a different space. And this is partially actually the owner even said, if you want to do it again, you should probably do it somewhere else. Not because I don't like it, but because it deserves a bigger venue or something. And so we took it to another venue and it was about the same size.
it was better, but it was a little bit more difficult getting out from, because we didn't have a double-sided green room.
Was that the Gothic church? I remember you saying something about taking it to a Gothic church.
Oh, no, there was a potential for that. There was a possibility that we might go to the old church downtown, because I have a friend who does sound there.
Oh, nice.
And that, I don't know why that fell through. I don't even remember anymore. Because we just had to make decisions as we went. Anyway, we ended up performing it at the Analog. And everybody was a great help. So we got to mount it. We only got to perform for one night. My mom came to see it.
Oh, nice.
And then Alice Cooper's assistant showed up.
So they were playing the next night.
Yeah.
Alice Cooper was.
Yeah. That part we did on purpose. We purposely did it so that they'd be in town, so I had enough time to figure out, like, how the fuck do I get through to these guys? And I texted one of them on Instagram, and just said, hey, we'll give you the first couple rows if you bring in the crew, free, on us. It's a story about you. And I didn't
know. That not terrifying?
Yeah, well, it was. It was an actual, when I typed it, I remember even looking at Julian and go, send. Let's see what happens. Are we going to get sued? Don't know. We'll find out. And just the opposite. The assistant showed up and said, this is a really, really, really fun show. And I'm having a great time, so I can't wait to see Act Two. And afterwards, I said, I talked to him and said, well, we're going to see Alice tomorrow. And he goes, well, unfortunately, Alice couldn't show because he'd just come into town and needed to rest. And so we got to go to the show and meet him.
Mm, wow.
And pretty much walked away with him going, keep doing what you're doing. And
wow.
Pat in the head and cool. What's that jacket come from? Oh, yeah, I know that brand. Just like get the gear was close, And so it was nice. It was.
So from unauthorized to authorized.
It is now authorized.
Sweet.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Side note, my uncle was at that same concert you were at.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He apparently loves Alice Cooper. So he didn't get the backstage pass, but he was there that night because I saw your corresponding Facebook post.
Nice.
But, oh, isn't that neat? Wouldn't it be cool if they crossed paths? I don't imagine that happening.
Yeah. That's the thing I like about Alice Cooper. One of those, it's just he's been around long enough. He just has a cross-section of fans of all ages and, backgrounds.
I remember what I remember him from most, and you'll probably want to slap me when I say this, but I remember him from the Staples commercial, the back to school.
Oh, yeah, I remember. No, it was funny. Yeah. Him and his daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was that. It might have been Calico, the one who got into comedy and acting. I think it was.
I don't know.
He has three kids, I believe.
I just assumed it was like some random kid they cast as.
Oh, it's his daughter.
Oh, it is? Oh,
yeah. Wow. Yeah, she's an entertainer now, too. She does improv. She spent some time in the Groundlings or something.
You said school's out forever. No, school's out for summer.
Big difference. Nice try, though.
Yeah. The Wayne's World cameo is always something that I got to... Oh, I knew him from that, too, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. We're not worthy.
Believe me, that horrible thought, that little shadow, the minute I got into the room, and I'm the only...
You're dolled dingus. Out, like, you're dressed up like him.
Yeah, I'm the only dingus in the room who's dressed up, like, just full on. So he's shaking someone else's hand, and I'm about five people down, and he just goes, and I'm like, uh-oh. And then I have to say, give a shout-out to Kyler, who is the photographer / assistant, who he looked at me and goes, here's the moment. Shook his hand, everything was great, and we were only told, just keep it down to, like, 10 seconds or whatever. He at least talked to us for 2 minutes.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure that was pretty... it feels like forever when you're meeting a hero.
So. It does, though, because you're getting that kind of stuff out there. And what else did he say? He said, you should do this down at Cooperstown sometime,
right?
His bar in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we get to perform at his...
Your boy?
Yeah. He said, he's gonna have a whole... Yeah. I have a new stage.
Wow.
And it's going to be interesting because, A, it's a sports bar. B, it's a family bar. And we have some risque content, although it is his story, and he's, put it in the media, so it's not something that's hidden or controversial necessarily.
Right.
It's out of his mouth. However, the stage is also apparently visible from the road.
Uh-oh.
That's another tricky thing. So it might have to be truncated.
You have a burlesque segment.
Yeah.
As well as the Met.
Quite a
yes.
few.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. There's a spider sequence. There's
the
dead babies.
Yeah.
Dead baby. And the drone flies out.
I did not see the dead baby sequence. I went to the dress, that first dress rehearsal. And
we didn't get around to that because I don't think she was present for the dress.
That's right. There was...
we have this baby head drone flying around with glowing eyes. And
wow.
And there was a...
it's fun.
I think there's also the mate. There's a mate sequence as well that would happen as well.
Yeah,
that didn't happen every night. Also, but the spider happened every night. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit of flash.
Black Widow, rather.
Bit of leg.
The Black Widow.
That was a lot of fun.
It was the weirdest play to be a part of. I was so happy to do it, but it was always like I felt like I was like I'm doing this guy's fanboy like thing. He's dressed up as Alice. He's like I'm the middle aged Alice. And I'm gonna sing with my girlfriend. We're gonna do this thing. It's like he's just getting off right now. That's cool. Whatever.
I can tell it was a labor of love when I saw it. Yeah. Like, wow, this was really cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was, and I completely bought you as
It worked. They wanted to give me a nose, and I'm like, I don't need the nose.
I was honestly, when I saw a picture of you before, and I was like, that's Alice, and I'm kind of skeptical. And then I was like, oh, well, go and have a good time at least. And then I go, wow, he was really good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no.
I mean, if we did a movie version, I would totally put on a fake nose for a movie version, you know, and all that kind of.
Oh yeah,
do that.
Yeah.
But
people are more judging about film adaptations than stage.
I had a fake nose for every night, the first set, except for one night, and then that one where where Kyler showed up, and my mom showed up. We didn't have any time, and I was like, "Fuck it, I don't need it. My nose is big enough."
Yeah. You know,
I got a big enough nose, and it's gonna be fine. And sure enough, the next night I'm like, "I'm going out. I'm not putting on a prosthetic nose." And walking up to my hero and going, no way. Like, I'm a pirate.
That's what I felt. It was a good balance because that's what you did in the play. But I look at it like playing Cyrano de Bergerac. Right. There's a picture of me holding that book as Alice, and it's like, and you can see my profile, you know, and you don't need the nose to play Cyrano. It's all in his head, you know? Like,
exactly.
He doesn't, you know, it's yeah.
It's not even about that. It's part of his character.
I definitely got into the way he walks and talks and slumps and all of that. You know, that stuff I would, mannerisms. Mm-hmm. But the nose is, you know.
It's part of his charm.
The nose is what everyone focuses on. If I'm a lead actor playing him growing up through, like, a decade or two or so, you know, then that's just going to throw everybody off, and it's going to fall off at one point.
Oh, yeah. You know? And you use what you got when you're in character. It's like, if you want to get that witch profile sneer, it's all part of the thing.
One of my favorite moments, you might not let me bring it up, but one of my favorite moments during the dress rehearsal, that girl who played Zappa.
Kate Wyatt.
She was up on stage doing Zappa, and like, her nose,
that's right. I forgot about that. And I think even one of the rehearsals, I might have even brought it up. It's like, if you have nose problems, just hold on in there with your
you
finger
did bring that
and
up,
keep
yeah.
going.
It was brilliant. Man. That was like somebody was strangling a cat out there. shut that baby up.
Someone's having automotive issues.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of plays. And I've only seen one of your plays. But you use West Ramsey a lot.
Correct.
How did you and West come together?
West, I was aware of West through the internet because he acts a lot. He's in a lot of productions.
Oh, he's a hard worker.
And I'd seen his name and face around, and so I was aware of him. And then he showed up for an audition for a play I directed a few years back called Headless Body and Topless Bar at the bar formerly known as Tonic, which is now closed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they went to two other names, and then they shut down.
Damn.
But it was a really fun space because we were able to make it feel like it was a strip club in the back room for that run. And I got the idea. Actually, it was Angus Vieira, the writer, and a friend of mine who's in a lot of things as well. I was hanging out with him at his house. And he goes, you know, I just saw this movie you've probably never heard of. It's this B film that no one's, you know, it's like probably direct to video. It's called Headless Body and Topless Bar. It's like a thriller set in a strip club. Guy comes there to rob it, accidentally kills the bartender, and puts the place on lockdown.
Wow.
And psychologically tortures him throughout the evening before he leaves. And I wasn't sure at first, and I went for it. And at auditions, this guy named Wes shows up, and I cast him as, the name is escaping me, but essentially he was a businessman.
Wes is listening to us right now going, it's Steve, it's Steve, the name is Steve, or whatever.
Steve, yeah. It was a name, it was a very straightforward name, and the idea was that he was, my nickname for him was the Kinkmeister, because he had a bunch of stuff in his suitcase that was stuff he'd take to the hotel or whatever. On the, you know, for a nooner.
that's a name.
Wes would do that.
Yeah.
So had he just moved from San Francisco at that point? Or?
Sacramento.
Sacramento.
Yeah, he had been here for a short period of time, and I'm kind of from the Sacramento Valley myself. So that was an instant, you know, connection. And then, I just thought he was perfect for it. And he has a lot more patience. He's very professional, and he works hard, and sometimes I think he should get more sleep.
West. Yeah, he
works nights and acts days.
This guy, I remember when it snowed here the first time in December.
And he's a great actor, is what I meant to say. He
walks,
works hard.
Walks through the woods, through the snow to get to work, you know, and everything else. It's just, Yeah, he's not only a hard worker as an actor, but hard worker outside of it too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's fine. I think he's getting a little kernels.
And a great guy, and someone like I don't work with people more than once unless I like them.
Yeah. Of course. <It's a puzzle. laughs> Of course. If you don't like them or trust them, you
Dylan's
can't.
Dylan's a fun director. Back. Yeah. I don't think I ever fought with Dylan once. That's a good sign.
We never fought.
Yeah. No.
It seemed pretty harmonious to me, although you probably wouldn't necessarily fight in front of people.
It happens.
It does happen. Sometimes you do it just to. Sometimes you have that baby tantrum moment. You just can't stand it, and you throw your script across the room and shake your head like this and go, say the name over and over again. I didn't do that. That's a friend of mine, also named Dylan. But
you hear that other Dylan?
Got that other Dylan.
Aggressive Dylans. I generally, follow the whole, keep the drama away from here. We got enough of that in the rest of our fucking life. Now we're on stage. Just be cool.
Did you also do Terra Angel's Horn?
Correct.
What was that one about?
That was a play written by my friend John Marble, who also went to Chico State with me in the same department.
This is a wonderful story, actually. There's a side story he has. I don't know if you've ever told it on radio before.
Marble's the guy that did the Pan 10, right?
Correct.
Okay, now I've
Yes, it's the same, the self-same. John Marble, I also cast in Headless Body. He played the bartender that I shot.
Oh.
So he had to be dead there the whole time.
Yeah, he'd be dead most of the time before he cut his head off. He only had about 5 minutes worth of dialogue, and then I killed him.
So he's on stage the whole time?
He's right behind the bar, so he got a chance to sneak away and check his phone or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But then we drag him out and cut his head off. And the next year, he came at me with a script, and he didn't come at me and hit me with it, and he just said, hey, check it out. I just wrote this B-movie. And I forgot about this part, but we both connected during Headless because we found out we were both from Chico State. Not only were we in the same college, we're in the same department, we're both English majors, the same years, and we're almost a generation apart, yet we had the same professors, same counselors, and knew the same people at the same bar.
Wow.
But we'd never met. So, it's bizarre.
But get this right, his son, John Marble's son, Alex,
He
goes to see a play one time in Chico, right? In Chico?
That's correct.
With John, with his father, and he's about 5 years old, right? And he's watching this play where all of a sudden, like, this one character is not showing up. And what was the character's name? And then came the friar.
It was the father of Kate, the character in a...
Is it the one that was based on 10 Things I Hate About You was based off of? Taming of the Shrew?
Taming the Shrew, correct. Yeah. So Kate, the woman.
She the Shrew?
Huh?
Is Kate the Shrew?
Kate is the Shrew.
Yeah, right. She is the Shrew. And right before we cut for intermission, there's a wedding setting up, and I played the priest. Just a simple role.
Mm-hmm.
But it was memorable partly to Alex also because I chased all the girls off stage during segments, or no, transitions. Mm-hmm. And so we're all on stage, and this guy's supposed to come on stage and say his line, and he's just not there. And so, it's not easy to improvise Shakespeare.
He's telling the story, I think, and Alex is listening because he's like,
right.
Oh my fucking God, I was at that show.
Yes.
And this is how terrifying, this is what he remembers. Go ahead.
The specific detail was this guy missed his cue because he was pissing a number of yards away. Between us and the stage was a whole bunch of blackberry bushes.
Yeah,
instead of going around it, because this guy apparently was a smack addict. He was a little bit off his rock. He's also a male nurse. Nothing against male nurses. He just happened to be a smack addict.
And, what's cereal? What's wrong with that? For us, it's like puffed corn. Puffed cereal.
Sugar corn smacks.
Yeah.
he just basically made a beeline for the stage. Went right through the blackberry bushes. His costume is all white.
Oh.
He's playing the old father. He talks like this. Of course you should get married to my daughter. Oh, yes. And he jumps up on stage, and we're like...
Rush to the blackberry bush.
I thought an elk was coming at us.
Because there's a sound, right? You just hear the sound, right? It's like...
Yeah. It's like... And we're like... And I'm like, holy shit. Someone's cutting through that without a machete. And just his skin and some loincloth, or not loin, but cotton. And he gets up on stage.
Dressed completely white, right?
And he's completely white. But he's coated in sweat and grime. And he starts to talk, and these little blossoms spread throughout his whiteness. Just start to bloom. And by the end of it, his shirt and his pants were red.
But what's he say? Marry this dancer. If you're going to marry him. Yeah. He's just
erupting in red. And
so this 5-year-old's watching this, and he's like, what is wrong with that man? He's bleeding all over. This is part of the show.
Yeah. And we get back to it.
Probably freaked out.
Oh, and then next thing you know, we're working on a show together, and yeah.
And he finds out, you know, like, just like, whatever, like 15, 20 years later, whatever, right? Like,
it was even more than that, because that was 1992 when that happened.
And you met Alex what year? Like, how, I mean, that's
3 years ago.
Yeah, so isn't that crazy? No idea, no connection to that. It's just like he had been at that show, and I think it's so hilarious. So the girls and all the people, they all doctored him up afterwards, just to cut that story short. But he didn't know that. Yeah. Now he played a clown without pity in Plan 10. So that's how damaged he was from that, I think.
Oh, wow. That's the band that was...
On Plan 10, yeah.
That's it, all
right. Yeah.
Weren't they in another play of yours?
They were in Plan 10.
Returned. They're like a side character. Yeah. Go on, yeah.
I didn't direct.
I gotcha. Yeah.
But they... basically don't, or they're working on a sequel to these last two plays that they played. They got some other friends. They come in to do the band, the Clowns Without Pity, right? And so what they're doing now is a movie.
A Clowns Without Pity movie?
Yes.
Nice.
Correct. And they're trying to basically like find these elusive.
Is this have anything to do with the Night Attacks?
Has nothing to do with it.
That's funny because the Night Attacks, the film he's working on, right? It doesn't involve the. That's the audition I went to, right? Those were the dial. It involved people doing. I don't want to give anything
There's
away.
Clowns, honestly, I honestly never even had them in mind.
Isn't that funny though?
Well, they're not auditioning.
Yeah. Well, they aren't really actors. I mean, right. Jordan, he was good in that. Jesus, what the fuck? That whole thing,
right.
And that short 72-hour Guignol thing they did. That was good.
In the movie.
I do not want to give that away. It's such a good thing. But there are some of those sort of clown things in your film. Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to get away from clowns.
Since you did mention it, though, you're going to Romania. Are you shot some in Romania already? Are you going back?
Sorry. Correct. We just got back in November. We were there the day that we found out Trump got elected.
They're walking by and they're like...
Were you Dracula's castle by chance?
Well, we hit a few castles. One is the real Dracula's castle. One's the one they call the real Dracula's castle.
That was in the movie.
No, they just... Not that I know of. I mean, Coppola might have shot at one of these places.
That was such a well-done film. It's so underrated.
Yeah.
You know, it's long and it's got Keanu Reeves in it.
Here's why they could have.
I liked it.
Because if you go to Bran Castle, they actually do have items from that film on under glass. They have a fake coin. I think they have a ring there, and at least one or two costume pieces.
Well, maybe they filmed it there. If it's up there on like the hill, like it is off the mountain, you know, then.
Because I never saw any text. I mean,
maybe it's not like they have to film the whole. Maybe they filmed it there too. Wouldn't that be cuckoo bananas?
That'd be fucking weird. It'd be cool. You did go there.
That's a good. That's a.
I've seen a picture of you posing next to Bela Lugosi's gravesite.
Correct.
When it comes to Dracula, would you prefer Coppola or Lugosi?
Oh, the two movies?
Ooh,
that's interesting. I never even thought to compare the two.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever actually even seen the original Dracula.
You haven't?
Not since I was a kid. Oh,
wow. Well, here's the thing.
I saw it just last October for the first time ever.
It's not a preference because they're totally different. They're almost totally different sports in terms of filmmaking.
I mean,
and I think Todd Browning. I mean, there's a lot of I'm kind of tainted by other people's opinions too because I listen to a lot of people who have opinions about Dracula because I'm studying for this Dracula thing.
Yeah.
And like for example, there is a lot of people out there who are of the opinion that the Todd Browning Dracula is inferior to the Spanish-speaking Dracula that was filmed at the same time.
Oh yeah,
Universal.
Same sets too.
Same sets.
Hmm.
And apparently, it's a lot of the shots are better.
I'm sorry. God, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I haven't thought about this in a while, but they used to do that, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Where they would just use the same sets and do the exact same script
for a foreign audience
with different. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they just like subtitle or dub things.
That's just so brilliant.
Yeah, it's
you know
amazing.
And were the shots similar?
Well, I'm to a point only because, you know, there's certain moments that just are just natural.
That's so brilliant. We should do that here. Like, seriously, I'm doing workshops and stuff, but imagine instead you invite people in, you go, look, I need a version like this. Because I had the idea of people coming in doing seven different versions of a movie, but what if you do it purely for languages?
That's totally brilliant.
Isn't it, though?
Uh-huh. If you do a Spanish version, promote heavily in like Hillsborough, because there's a large concentration of Spanish.
Yeah, you could go anywhere, but you could look for that. So promote for maybe a Spanish speaking director. You could you could get French people easy coming up from Canada, easy peasy. I mean, you could there are many multi language people here, and I'm sure that all of these actors are actually looking for an outlet. I mean, there are so many different ethnicities and languages and cultures that are here in Portland, mostly white people. But
you want to see more people.
But seriously, that would be, I don't know, kind of fascinating. If you could somehow give somebody some form of a budget, and you're like, but here's the thing, you're going to use these sets, you're going to use these locations, here's the storyboards, have fun with it, go ahead,
that'd
play,
be interesting.
But
that's
like,
great.
You direct this one, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be really interesting.
Yeah. And that's, as far as your original question about the comparison.
Sorry, that
to
was,
two,
that's really
No, fun. No, that's totally, yeah, that's exactly that's, what we do.
Inspiration strikes in real time and it's recorded.
Yeah.
Coppola thing, to be honest, when I first saw it, I didn't like it.
Dictaphone.
I was in college.
I didn't like it either the first time.
Yeah, and I think I enjoy it more now, but...
as you start to make movies, you're like, God, that would be hard.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things I admire about what he did, but at the same time, it's like, at least for me, I instantly have like a gate on, like, sure, I'm going to be influenced by some people. Mm. And then sometimes you're just like, I see that, I like it, I'm not going to do anything like that because I don't want to fuck with it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Right.
And I don't want to be accused of being like that guy, not because I don't like him, because it's too obvious. It's Coppola.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Find something obscure and be influenced. For me, it's like I really try to dig and go, what's the shit that no one's seen? And if it blows my mind, you know, like, learn something.
Well, I wonder how that happened for him, too. Do you think they came to him with that and go, look, we'll hire you to direct this? Or do you think it was a passion project for him? Because Coppola always kind of seemed to me like kind of a Lucas or like kind of a Kubrick, where he wanted to do his own projects. I imagine he probably wanted to do it, right?
Yeah, auteur, businessman school. You know, those guys were a generation of business directors.
Oh, the people, the group they came
from. People
didn't
get him at first because they were like...
You imagine, and just imagine Jim Morrison.
You know?
Jim Morrison could have been one of them if he hadn't dropped out. They were making fun of him, too, and he just couldn't take it. He's like, that's fucking, man, let's just make music, man.
You never know.
But the Coppola thing, what I'm learning now, just by researching the novel, is that he put some shit in there that I thought I could take. I was like, oh, no one's done this. I'm reading Dracula. You know, like, oh, what about those little blue flames that exist over, like, buried treasure that Harker sees from the train? And Julia's like, oh, no, Coppola did that. I'm like, God damn it. I need to watch that again.
I do hate that though when you've seen it and you think it's your idea and you think, oh God, I really love this, but I have to watch these five. You might have been, God, you saw that when you were 5 years old and it's been done. That's why
it is parallel thinking.
I do believe in complete originality, but you can have original ideas.
Sure.
It's just about how you tell it and whatever.
Yeah. I've heard there's like only five five separate stories ever written.
No matter what you're inspired,
else is,
you know.
Yeah.
I didn't automatically want to just tell stories. Nobody, none of us. We heard stories first, you know.
Here's the thing. This is a parallel topic, but okay, if you could break down as an actor who performed as the lead in Shock Opera, which story is that? What is that? I mean,
what is Shock Opera?
If you were to be Joseph Campbell right now, play Joseph Campbell, break down my play and go, it's this. You know, like, if, for example, like, oh, it's King Midas. It's not King Midas.
I see.
But you know what I mean? Like, what's the old story that it might remind you of? What it means? It's not Oedipus.
And that's what I mean. It's like, there's those kind of things where you could come up with an original idea and go back. You could go back to that.
Yeah.
But what would you say?
The Prodigal Son. I think that's the Shock Opera.
Yeah.
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 And that's what Cooper said before. That's why I wanted to see you.
That makes sense to me, yeah. No,
but
at the same time, like, it's also just a complete underlayer. Like, whereas I think back in, you know, it's there, it's just there. It's just kind of just a thin. You can say the Prodigal Son, but it's not like the first thing that comes to your mind. I mean, at least not me as an actor anyway.
Right.
But like, it's there, it exists. With older Greek plays and the like, that was obvious. You know, I mean, we're talking exposition. These, they were good writers, they were thoughtful writers, but they were also... I don't know, some of the first documented writers. Right. So their exposition skills weren't that great. And I mean, they had always had the Deus Ex Machina, and it was just, right. It was pretty lame writing. If
and
you
then
really
the cloud came down and
yeah.
zapped.
Yeah, that Deus Ex Machina. Yeah. that just, man, that's just the worst. It's the worst.
And technically, Shockhopper isn't really a completed, finished project.
It's still evolving.
Yeah,
It could. I mean, yeah.
We did it under the gun intentionally, so we wouldn't procrastinate.
It's such a beautiful play though. Even the tech rehearsal that we had, like, even though it's like failures in sound, like that first the preview, like, and it was off, you know, and it wasn't, but it wasn't terrible. Nice. I mean, somebody came up to me afterwards and was like, you got to have better sound, you got to do this. And I'm like, I know, and I trust their opinion. I'm like, trust me, like, this
we
was like,
we,
I know. But like, you keep anything else besides, okay, I mean, yeah, we'll keep talking about it, sure. But like, exactly. You know, it's, yeah. But everything else was great and this, that, and the other. And
well, I fully understood what that was when I came into it. So I was going to go, you know, you could have done this better. Because I figured, yeah, they know what's going on. Yeah,
we're doing tech for the second time or third time live.
Right.
You know, as a preview. You know, that's just, I don't know. You see that movie Birdman, right? Where they just like, he starts, did you replace my gin with water? And he loses his shit, Edward Norton does. And he starts like, you know what? This is fucking acting, man. Like, you don't just take the, he starts breaking the fake, this is all fake fucking bananas. And everyone's losing their shit and the fucking curtains just drop and everyone's like, fucking yeah. And like Michael Keaton's character's like, he's fucking fired. He's like, we gotta get him gone. Like, no, we can't. He's the one that, we sold out. We sold out all the next night. He's the reason people are here. It's like, he can't do that to my, you know, and it was just,
wow.
I don't know, the movie's fun. So I heard a critique once where it was like, it's film people acting like they're from theater. And I'm like, do you remember where people come from? Hmm. People come from theater and then just go to film. Some of them do.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of those actors that are in that are very theater-based. Mm-hmm. And even Zach Galifianakis, he started from the comedy. You know how hard that is, you know?
Stage, yeah.
Timing,
it's
all of that.
Still stage and still time.
It's just silly to me.
I was impressed with Galifianakis' performance in that. It was
more
like real than I thought.
I love that. Yeah, that's how you got me into this shit, huh?
Yeah.
Huh? Right. Things that matter.
I saw the way I saw Shock Opera was like none of the video footage, and sounds like a lot of the performance.
Oh, you didn't see the video shit.
Oh no video.
Oh, okay.
And no, wow. And it sounds like there was a few stage scenes that I didn't see, and I still thought it was. Just, without the added context of everything, there are parts where I went, oh, I wonder what's going on here, but oh, that's probably in the video. But overall, I understood what the play was.
And that's good.
It was really good.
That's great.
Yeah, some of the videos, some of those things, there are parts in the play where you could probably like add an extra 10 pages of new ideas and take like 20 or 30 of the ones in your script and like, you know, because like we could spend way more time with Cheryl if we wanted to.
Yeah.
That's such a footnote.
Yeah, exactly, and that's also one of those things too that I intend to do naturally.
But with the timing of everything,
once we got going, it was like Kate's playing a lot of characters, and I shouldn't like load her with too many lines.
Well, she wasn't supposed to until that person dropped out, right? The person dropped out.
Right.
I remember. I have video of it. Yeah. I was looking at it the other day. She goes, "Okay, we're like around, and I'm filming her like figure out the character of maybe doing Michael and then but doing Miss Sloan really." And it was the decision. We're like, do we just cut Michael out? Do we just keep Michael in the videos?
Yeah, that was the weird part with the live scenes, that character, the
It played.
Without that person being on the stage, no one noticed.
Not to mention the fact
that you didn't even see a character that's actually
in the band.
Wrote most of the hits.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was just like part of it.
Gone.
And this was before you recasted that part?
We didn't recast, we just went forward.
Oh, gotcha.
And
we almost did. We almost did do something. Yeah, and we might do that for the future. Like, here's the thing about it.
Yeah.
It's that Funhouse lounge stage. Mm-hmm. You put a lot of people on there, and it starts to get crowded pretty quickly. So not having that extra band member, I thought, helped it.
Oh.
I mean, you look at this stage, and I think the Funhouse's stage is maybe like less than like one. Like, it's one of these guys right here, right?
Yeah, I felt the same way. It did clean up a lot of the movement. And there was a little bit of snags going on before the actor left.
It was, you know, what's funny though too, because that person that played Michael looked exactly like.
That was the trick. Yeah, all the people. She looked the most like the original character she was playing, and it was spooky. Like, people were like, and then that was the one that quit.
Can you imagine if Michael came to the show?
Oh God,
I can't wait to see my story.
Yeah, who's gonna play me? And like, oh my dear God, I look like the. Kind of a, you know, good-looking girl. And he was, you know, he was definitely the one, the joke was within the Alice Cooper group, he got all the girls. You know, he was the jock. He was the one who played football. Everybody else played track.
You guys look like ADOT workers.
Yeah.
Cut line from the play.
Mm-hmm.
What was what made you decide, or what inspired you to do the cross gender casting?
A couple things.
The fact that only the women showed up to the auditions.
That was one of the main ones. Also, because I did ask a bunch of people who actually play music, and they turned me down.
Wow.
But it was good. I mean, it was all amicable.
I think it worked really well.
It worked very
well. And I gotta say, with the writing process of everything, the way you could change it and all of that, let's just say the sequence where he goes through all of his hits, you know, like year after year, boom, boom, make that money.
Right.
And I'm like just dancing to it, and like I'm falling over, I'm doing more and more cocaine. And
mm-hmm.
like that's one of those like where you took like an entire chunk of his life and just like,
yeah,
you know?
Four years.
You know,
it's compressed it into 4 minutes.
And that's the kind of thing where you could almost do this with some of the other sequences. It's just, I really appreciate it because I was doing the same thing at the time. I was transcribing another book into a play. And so I was just like, man, you took it from two and you were really getting into it. And we would sit down and he'd be like, okay, guys, I'm going to read a passage from this book now. You know, and from Shep Gordon's book or from Dennis Dunaway's book.
Right.
And it was cool, you know, we got to really get into it. I don't know. I'm alive. The whole thing felt really alive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We refer to those as the blackout years.
Oh, nice.
Technically, it was only three albums, but I included...
Did we have blackouts? We should have had blackouts.
We should have. You're right.
See, what I can't wait to do is have that play happen here. You know the funny thing about being an actor is, and you have your own theater and all that shit...
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, you feel so fucking pompous.
You
feel so full of shit.
Yeah.
until the show does well, you're like, okay, good, good. Uh-huh. Because like somebody could come here like, he thinks he can play Alice Cooper at his own theater and charge me money. Or like, he thinks he can play Tommy, huh?
Right.
Fuck this guy. You know?
That was almost a good John Wayne impersonation.
I just... Hey there, pilgrim. You think you can take me? I don't think so, partner. I've only seen a few of John Wayne's films. I did watch one recently that was really good.
Yeah.
I forgot which one it was called. It was the challenge. I started with C, I think. Anyways, I never really liked John Wayne and wanted to watch him just because of his like personal life.
Right.
Mm. He's very simple.
Oh yeah,
but I liked kind of seeing him put up to other actors that were better than him.
Interesting guy, like a lot of contradictions. Like
a lot of contradictions.
Actors,
you
know. Yeah, I love his movies, and honestly, what his personal life, I generally
I don't care. When I saw that movie, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna let it go, because you know, even though he went after the commies and the Red Scare, which is awful.
Yeah. He was also weirdly supportive, not weirdly, but supportive of young George Takei.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're on a set.
Was George out by then?
No,
he wasn't. No.
But in his head, he knew what he was hiding. He's like, well, it's obvious I'm Japanese, American. But
John Wayne, with
being
gay
and young.
George Takei kind of sounds like John Wayne,
doesn't he? Well, he might, because I think this was a really big moment for him because basically he was kind of down. On a set.
I heard this story.
And John Wayne gave him a pump-up speech. It was just like, hey, you know, you just got to let that stuff... I'm not going to try to impersonate John Wayne. But it was like, you know, just roll it off your back. Like, you know,
you got to let that stuff just roll off your back.
Okay. Oh, I can imagine John Wayne like, you might be Asian, but at least you're not homosexual.
Right. Or a commie.
Commie. You might be Asian, pilgrim.
You're not, are you?
You might be an Asian, pilgrim.
Okay.
Or at least you're not a gay, homosexual commie.
Can I tell you guys a story?
Yes.
You were about to say something.
I was just going to say, you ever think about like, oh man, am I going to be like the next Clint Eastwood? Like the guy that everyone's like, that guy's the hard ass. Or not the next John Wayne was like, that guy's the man's man. Because I don't think of myself as a man's man. But every now and then I get that fleeting thought of like, but I could be.
Yeah.
I could hitch my belt just right.
Yeah.
Walk like I'm bow-legged.
For my age, it was Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford was the shit, wasn't he though?
Love Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Man, so many good people. One time, this is kind of a long story. Do you guys mind to tell a long story?
Yeah.
All right.
We totally mind.
One time, just randomly, My friend Ben and I send each other random videos, as I'm sure a lot of friends do. Mm-hmm. Ben sent me, posted a video on my Facebook wall. It was, I'm sure you both may have seen this by now. It's a pretty famous video clip. Ernest Borgnine appearing on Fox and Friends, and they're like, "Wow, you're 95 years old."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, I'm 95 years old. How can you be 95? You look so good. You look so vibrant. How can you like look this good and be 95?" Mm-hmm. And Ernest leans over and whispers, but the mics up pick it up. "I masturbate a lot."
And his eyes are just bugging out, man.
Oh yeah.
Is that the end of the story?
No.
Okay, cool. You're like, this is like a long story. Okay, good. Okay, cool.
That's the introduction of the story. So Ben and I laugh over that. I was like, wow, he seems like a cool guy. Wouldn't it be cool to meet him? Mm-hmm. A couple days later, we get word that who's coming into town?
But, Ernest Borgnine. Other than, yeah.
Awesome.
Ernest Borgnine's coming to town. And Ben's like, "Oh, man, we should have to go." And I'm like, "We do. The dude's 95. He was probably not coming back to town again. He's 95 years old, and I turned out to be
how old
correct.
Was he?
He was 95 at the time.
No, how old?
95.
Okay.
95. A few days ago, would have been his 100th birthday.
And he looked like a big-time cigar smoker, too.
He may have been, and he was not...
He had that big gap in his teeth, right?
He did.
Correct.
He was not exactly the most svelte individual. He was overweight his whole life, and he's lived to 95, so yeah, I have hope.
Right, yeah.
But...
just stay away from those cigarettes, kid.
Okay. I only have the occasional cigar.
Oh, do you? Yeah, careful with the cigars.
Oh yeah.
I had a buddy bring out a cigar last night, and I can't stand them, man.
Yeah, really?
I just feel like just dog meat afterwards. Really? You know, just like awful.
I'm okay with it.
I hate the aftertaste, but I love like the.
It's the aftertaste. Yeah. Yeah.
So you met him.
We did, but so nice. The talking of John Wayne and gay people made me think of the story. But,
oh no, what
you can't say that anymore. You can't say gay people. You have to say LGBTQ or otherwise. And otherwise, each letter of otherwise is actually an acronym. It's each stands for the O and the T and the H and the E and the R and the W.
That's too many letters for me.
I'm making that up.
Forgive me if I just say gay people. It's not intended as an insult.
No.
But anyway, we...
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
There's anything wrong with that.
That's a Gilbert Gottfried impersonating. Anyway, go ahead.
Ben and I decided to run out. He's doing a screening of Marty at the Witzel Auditorium at the Portland Art Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
We just said, oh, we should go see him.
Yeah.
There probably won't be that many people there.
Mm-hmm.
The line goes around the block.
Yeah. Which way did the block?
Oh, shit.
Which way did the line go?
Down
towards the northwest?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I'm so bad with directions in Portland and like locations. But
you're at the Witzel?
Yeah, the Witzel. And he's going to do this, not a Q&A, but this interview with Ben Mankiewicz beforehand on stage. And we think, oh, we're home free. But we get in line and we're afraid mm-hmm. that we're not going to make it into the screening.
Uh-huh.
And been like we're like far down the line. And
is this a murder story?
No.
How'd you get in?
I'll let you decide that for yourself later. Remember, Ernest Borgnine is not alive anymore. But
dun, dun, dun.
But
Jesus Christ, what did you do?
I'll tell you.
I mean, cheese and rice.
We thought we wouldn't get in. We ended up getting in. We got all the way to the back row. There were a couple of seats in the center, and like people, just a few people down from us. That was the cutoff, so we barely got in.
Wow.
I remember Ben Mankiewicz, incidentally the grandson of Herman Mankiewicz, who co-wrote Citizen Kane.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. That's why I know the name. Okay. Thank you.
He was interviewing. He's also, I don't know if you watch The Young Turks, he's on their show.
Who is he? What's he look like?
He's one of the correspondents. He's this like scruffy haired Jewish guy.
Yeah, is he kind of skinnier?
Skinnier, he has...
Yeah, I know which guy, yeah, the beard thing.
Yeah, he has...
Kind of like that. I didn't shave for a few days kind of guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More than what you have.
Yeah, I haven't shaved for like a week. Has it been a week?
He kind of has a scruffy whisker.
I'm part...
Actually kind of like what you have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just like 5 o'clock shadow with a week, if you can get a 5 o'clock
shadow. Right.
I'm part Cherokee, so I don't get cheek hair. This is as good as it's going to get for me. You ever see me in a beard on film? It's a fake fucking
fucking beard.
I can't grow facial hair either for some reason.
I can grow it. I can do the Johnny Depp thing where I get the thing and
we come from dolphin people.
Anyway, he was telling. It was 5 years ago that I saw him, so some of the memories are fuzzy. But he was telling all these stories. One time, this group of Italian people recognized him from here to eternity.
Oh wow!
This was back in the 50s or 60s when this happened. And he said that they got really hostile with him. Hey, spoiler alert! Hey, you're the guy that killed Sinatra. And they start to gang up on him.
Oh shit!
Did they say kill or did they say chow? You're the guy that chowed Sinatra.
No, I think they said kill, and they started to gang up on him. He's like, "You fellas, it's only a movie." He's like, "Oh yeah, well, can you prove that he's still alive?" I forget exactly how he told it.
Yeah. And that's awesome.
It is. And the other story, the other thing I remember, the story he told, he talked quite a bit about From Here to Eternity, but a lot of it's lost because it's been a long time. The other thing I remember is the theater going dead silent because...
oh, shit.
He starts talking. You know who I always felt really sorry for? The gays.
Oh no!
it didn't come from a bad place, but he's a 95-year-old dude.
Right. Well, he felt sorry for them, though. Yeah. Why?
They have a real rough shot of life. The gays. I feel so bad, and everyone's like completely silent. And Ben McWhistle's like, "Yeah, so
mother." Yeah. Anyway.
just as the movie.
We're just going to brush that aside.
Yeah.
What do you mean we can't use this in court? What do you mean it's inadmissible? He said something about the case. This relates directly to the case. This 99-year-old murderer 4 years ago said this on stage. You can't just bleep this on, Your Honor. Sorry, I just got done watching the People vs. O.J. Simpson with the Cuba Gooding.
Oh yeah. I've watched that whole series.
It was not bad.
Ten times.
Ten times?
Seriously. But anyway, I was...
Wow, you must really like it.
I do.
Somebody compared it to Kubrick, I saw.
Really?
Recently, yeah. They were like, it's very Kubrick. You know, and I'm like, oh, I guess you could say... Wow. I mean, the shots where they go into the televisions, and like...
It must have been a long time.
It must have been so fun to sometimes they... Yeah, well, they'll like the cameras, it'll pan, sorry to cut off, and it'll go in like in between the camera that's filming the thing, and it has the exact same quality of what you saw. And like, it must have been so fun to make the 95 quality, 94, 95 quality of the picture.
TVs.
Yeah, I've done that before. It's fun. You get to you're filming on like expensive like cameras, right? And you're just like degrading the footage to look like just garbage.
Right.
I know it must have been kind of fun to do that, you know. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go on.
He talks with Mankiewicz for a while on stage. Ben and I decided to ditch the screening right it was about to start. There had been an auction at the beginning where if you paid enough money to the theater or whatever, you could get a photo opportunity with Borgnine and his autograph.
Right.
We didn't have the money to do that.
Wow, they were just like, he was just saying, like, if you give it to the theater, he was just giving
it
to that.
It was kind of an auction that the theater did.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really nice of him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it takes me.
But
most of them are probably gay. I feel sorry for him.
we couldn't afford to go to do that, so we decided.
If you had been gay, you could afford it.
Oh, you poor souls! You've had a rough life.
Yes, poor straight bastards. At least you're not gay. It's weather for the gays.
And anyway, we went out to the hallway.
Jesus Christ!
Right before the screening began, because we figured, do we want to see a screening of a movie that we'll probably have another chance to see eventually? Do we want to meet Ernest Borgnine?
Yeah.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. So we went out. I remember
were you chuckling to yourselves? Like, idiots, all those fools inside, what are they thinking?
Oh, no. But I was glad that not more people joined us. There was a room kind of next to where the auditorium is. A semi-translucent door. You couldn't see in, but you could see how the light was. And I remember Ben and I...
Did you see that, like a silhouette of the gap in his teeth?
No. I remember Ben and I were standing outside that door, and there were constant like light flashes because he was doing the photo opportunities.
Got it.
And it was like...
Right.
And Ben's just been a nice... Or just waiting a long time, and...
That was the quickening.
The Quickening.
None of this happened on the set of the Quickening set. That's a line from my fifth film. I didn't know The Quickening was a real film. It was just a movie I made up in my movie. None of this the director goes like, none of this happened on the set of The Quickening.
Eventually, Borgnine comes out of the auditorium, and he has a pretty big entourage with him, like four or five people, like yeah. surrounding him. I'm like, this is Ernest Borgnine. Like, I don't want to like belittle the guy. He's talented, but it's not like we're trying to square off against Brad Pitt.
Right. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But he won an award for Marty, right?
He did.
Yeah.
He beat James Dean.
Out of Giant.
I think so. It was going to be a posthumous Oscar had he won.
No, he did. No, that's right. He didn't get that posthumous, did he?
No, it was Borgnine that beat him.
Wouldn't he have been a supporting in that anyway?
I feel like
Rex was much more of a lead in that.
I haven't seen it.
Could have been, but anyway, we were.
Giant's just the most beautiful color, like just so. Yeah, I mean, and the scene where he's like bathing in the fucking. Oil is like the moment when they were watching those rushes, it's the moment they found out James had died in his car. And mm-hmm. It was a haunted car, too. You should look at that car.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we were waiting. Eventually, they came out. Ernest reaches over, shakes Ben's hand, and he's like, Mr. Borgnine, so nice to meet you. And he's like, yeah, thank you. And then he's coming over to me, and I reach my hand out, and he grabs my hand, and like, Ernest Borgnine, it's so good to meet you. He gets this horrified look on his face, and he's like, don't squeeze so hard. And he walks, he's like, oh, I'm sorry, it's good to meet you. He's like, yeah. He goes walking on.
Wow.
And I'm not even at the best part of the story yet. There's a guy. There was a guy that was like right there, watching, like who was a bystander when it happened, and he laughs. Don't squeeze so hard. That's the greatest thing I ever seen. He walks off.
Is that like echoing in the? People are watching Marty right now. And you're in adjoining walls. Somebody heard that. Like yeah. In the theater, you hear that. The walls are pretty thin right there. That's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And people are like, why are we watching this?
The dude walks off in one direction. Ben and I. Like we go a different direction from the spy standard.
Which dude? The Borgnine?
Oh no, Borgnine like walks in the corridor and is gone with his entourage.
He didn't go up the stairs. He went.
He went like down this corridor in front of the theater, and there was a door at the end.
Okay. Not by the bathrooms, but opposite.
I don't remember the.
I'm just trying to help everybody who's listening right now. Here, Portlandians, you know.
I don't know.
Is that what we call it?
Portlanders? Assuming
Portlanders.
Assuming they've been to the Whistle. It's pretty good little theater. But anyway. Just some random dude. He went to the end. I could show you sometime if you want to see like the where everything happened.
You map it out for me. Just like and then this is where he. I squeezed his hand too hard.
Yeah. But he went out and the random dude's like that's hilarious.
Yeah.
He disappeared. Ben and I went up a different way than he did. We're going through. The lobby, and we see him at a distance. He's like, "Hey, don't squeeze so hard!"
Oh, shit.
And then we're like, "We went." Yeah,
how far were you away? Like a good 50 yards or so.
We were like across this room, over from here to like where the doors are to.
This is like the after. He says it the second time, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's the second time.
Yeah.
we walk out. We're walking in the front, and somehow he comes around and sees us again. Hey, don't squeeze so hard. And they're like, all right, buddy, thank you. And we decide, Ben and I decide, hey, we're hungry. Let's go get some hot lips. We're walking down the street. We're three blocks down the street, and suddenly I hear this engine pulling up. And
oh,
then,
crap.
And then... oh God, who is this? And then suddenly, hey, don't squeeze so hard. The same guy.
Wow.
I think at least four different times calling us out.
That's a really amazing story there.
That's actually, dedication.
That's really funny.
But 3 months later, like 3 months and 3 days after that, Ernest Borgnine dies. And like, oh my God. And I tell people, Ernest Borgnine died. And like,
what month?
You probably killed him
when
with
did
your
he
handshake.
Die? What day did he die?
He died like July 8th, 2012, and I met him April 5th.
He died in July? Oh, wow. Wow. And you met him in April?
Met him in April. And people kept telling me I killed him with that handshake.
Awesome.
One of my favorite stories to tell, man.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Do you ever see the short movie. You know the guy who did Heavy Metal Parking Lot? The name is escaping me at the moment, but he did a lot of other smaller short films, and one of them was On the Road with Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, I've seen some driving a trailer.
Yes.
I've seen clips on YouTube.
Yeah. It's like an RV or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks about the same as he does in that when I saw him.
Yep.
That idea, though, that story you just told would be so fun as a... That's the kind of stuff we put in Marty in Transit, where, mm-hmm. like, there was the ongoing... You know, it's a story, so things like... But, like... It was the things where like characters would get out and they'd be like, "Hey, I remember you from like 30 minutes ago." You know, kind of. But that's not direct dialogue, right. Of course. But you know, like that's brilliant. That would be great. And if we do the sequel, like that'd be so fun. Or an actor character in Smitty Live was like, "Hey, yeah, don't scream so hard." Like you're like by doing that, you almost don't even have to have the actor there. Sometimes you can just have the vocals or. Anyways, it goes on and on. And I think that's just a good story, man. It was a long one, but it was good.
It was. I apologize for the length.
No, it was a great length. I kept interrupting you.
I love that story. It was a great experience. It's a golden age actor. You never, like, most of them are dead.
Yeah.
And he is too now. But yeah. It was just a great opportunity.
Yeah, who from that era is still alive? No, you're going to say something?
Not many people. There's
You got Clint.
That's why I love listening
who was around
to
that
the
time, I think.
Gottfried, because they've been targeting people who are, you know, living in Hollywood, where they live, or at least L.A., and finding a few, some of them just in time.
Yeah. they're going fast. There's, there's like... I don't know if it's Golden Age, but there's like Vera Miles, from Hitchcock, Kim Novak. There's
God.
You're talking about the Gottfried show?
Well, in terms of, you know, finding people who are up there in the years 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And they have a list, and like almost daily, they're crossing people off on an almost daily basis because of the age. And you know they're lucky to get, like, say for example, just within the last year they got Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, see, he's still alive.
But not Mary Tyler Moore in time because she's been sick for a long time. You know?
Did Mary die?
Yeah, she did like a month ago, right?
A couple weeks ago.
You know what's funny is, I think that we're going to have just as many people die this year. But the media somehow is like, news is crazy. Let's just talk about dead celebrities again. That worked like 10 years ago.
Right.
Let's do it again. And it gets so oversaturated to where it doesn't matter who dies really. And you're just like... Right. Okay, cool. Mary Tyler Moore died this year. If it had happened in 2016, I probably would have known it more because everyone was like, "And did you know?"
Well, now
David Bowie.
It's the age. You know, it's,
it was a very people, it was a very big music year of death. So last year it was
talent.
A lot of music.
There's a lot of talent that was going on. And that's just they're at that age.
God, it was,
and we are.
We were talking.
Turned 95, and it's just great that this is.
Last time I was here, he had Warhol Kaufman / Baraka Noel.
Mm-hmm.
He was here, and we did kind of a trace talk like we're doing. We had an audience, but we had kind of a three-way podcast with me, Warhol, and him. And one of the things he asked was, what was the hardest death for you of last year? And I had a hard time. It's hard for me to like think, oh... This one was more important to me than this one, but I have my answer now.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
It's a tie between Gene Wilder and Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman's a good one, too. He was early on in the year, too.
He was.
Yeah, Gene Wilder was mine, I'm pretty sure. That was my pick.
That was your pick.
Yeah.
It's hard to pick, because there's a lot of them that made me really
sad.
Alan
Rickman was great, though. I'm still watching movies that I find him in. And some of Gene Wilder's, too, but I think I've seen his plethora of his work, and even some stuff that he's... I just haven't read his... He was a writer, so I haven't read his books. I'm sure they're really fun.
Yeah.
He only directed one movie, I think, and it was the Sherlock movie, the other brother of Sherlock. It was sort of like unknown.
Sherlock's smarter brother.
Not so quite smarter brother. It was something like that. Yeah, he played the not so smart version of Sherlock.
Right.
It was funny. I forgot the actress that's in it. She's wonderful. But I forgot who it was. But they have like a song and dance part. I think it's on Netflix. When I last saw it,
is it?
It might still be.
Sherlock's not so smart brother.
You know what? I might have actually gotten it from the library.
Oh,
but
really?
Yeah, you'll find it. You just type in Gene Wilder, Sherlock, and it'll pop right up.
Okay, I'll look after.
It's not like the greatest thing in the world, but it, like, you know, I think about it sometimes, and it's fun. I just love Wilder. He was just so good.
What's your favorite non-Mel Brooks Gene Wilder movie?
Okay, good question.
Do you have one?
Non-Mel Brooks?
Non-Mel Brooks.
Everything's popped in my head right now. I'm like, I gotta think about it. I gotta think about it.
Well, the first one that came to my head was Willy Wonka. Probably that's it.
Mine is Silver Streak with him and Richard
Pryor.
Oh, that's
so funny. I've seen that. I don't remember shit about it, but I had a courier company for a few months in town, and I named it Silver Streak after that movie because I had a silver truck.
Watch it again. It's fun.
Yeah?
I think his best, my favorite performance in a non-Mel Brooks movie of his, if I had to pick it, would be the one in Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, I forgot.
It's so small.
Role, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but it's so good.
Oh, God.
And like, and it was funny. I think he had said something at one point that they'd asked him, I was acting, and everyone was being serious, and everyone kept laughing. I think it was Mel Brooks or somebody, and they go, why is everyone laughing? And I was like, because you, look at you.
You're a curly redhead.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a great scene where he's just like, and then I'm this. And they pick him up, these hitchhikers, and they kick him out because they find out that he he works in a not a morgue, but he's the guy that dresses the dead bodies and the
Undertaker.
Basically, yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm a mortician. I'm an Undertaker, yeah, or whatever. And they go, like, it just gets really silent and they kick him out.
We can't handle that.
It was funny, too, because it was the first time Gene Hackman's character was like, don't sell that cow. And he was just, that's so funny. And like, he's like, they love him. They're like, they love these guys. These guys are great. They're just robbing banks and they got everybody with them. And it's just, yeah, they kick him out. And the wonderful thing about that was, like, and then they did Young Frankenstein and God, Gene Hackman just plays the old blind man in that, you know?
Oh, God, I love that.
You know, and just, like, the connections of everybody are just wonderful.
Yeah.
You know? You know what's a really underrated movie is, I haven't seen it in a while, I need to see it again, is Bullworth?
Have it.
Never seen it.
Yeah.
I understood the premise of it, so I appreciate it.
It's fun.
What they were doing.
It's fun. I mean, I like a good Warren Beatty performance. They're few and far between, but he's good.
I bought it really cheap once. At Everyday Music or something.
The poster is wonderful.
Oh, it is.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I saw it, I didn't care for it.
Yeah.
Then I saw it again. I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty good.
Yeah. I remember seeing that as a kid. Like, I was about 9 or 10
It wasn't
or
marketed
or so.
Well. That was, I think, the thing.
How do you market something like that, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to market. Baby. He always does something new.
Yeah, but it's political based, so it's difficult. What's one of the most successful political movies? It would probably be Dave with Kevin Klein. That's an amazing movie, and I love Charles Grodin. He's one of my favorites.
Who's he in that?
He's still fucking alive, dude. He's his buddy who helps him do his taxes, and he's so bummed out. He's like, God, this is crazy. What do you make me do this for? He's like, I need you to help me fix the budget of America. But, like, look, you can't tell anybody.
The guy who pushed prostitutes out windows in Catch 22. Yeah, I love Charles Grodin.
He's amazing, isn't he?
He's a great actor.
And he doesn't age, you know? He always has the most perfect wig. Yeah. He lusts ever Miss Piggy in The Great Muppet Caper, and he's... Mm-hmm. Oh, he's just wonderful.
Earlier today, my friend, I was at my friend's house. He was flipping through on-demand movies. One came up. It's like, Charles Grodin is whatever. And I'm like, didn't he die recently? And he's like, I thought he had died. Turns out he didn't, but my friend got pissed. So, hey, don't tell me Charles Grodin died.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be the same way. Yeah, because it's the thing. It's like at every scene, he's been in, I remember so excited to see a movie one day with my buddies. We went out to the theater. He was in it with him and a few other people. I think Zach Braff might have been in it. I don't remember. No. It was the dude maybe he was in it, but it was the dude from Arrested Development and Teen Wolf 2.
Wolf 2?
Yeah.
I know you're talking about Bateman, Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman, yeah.
Yes.
And it was just, it was bad. It was so bad. And my buddies, I see him, I was like, ah, that's just, this moment where he's like, fuck, that lamp's hot. And I'm just like, God, that was a really good fuck from Charles Grodin. But that's the only good part in the entire movie. And we're leaving the theater, and my buddies are like, so? I'm like, God, that was bad, huh? And they're like, wow, we're surprised. We're in the back of the car, and they're just like, we're driving. We're in the parking lot at the theater, and it's like, oh, we're surprised you're seeing it. We didn't want to say anything, because we also thought it was really bad. But we knew you liked Charles, so we didn't want to say anything. That's like my old buddies, Connor Wallace, and gosh, that was Elise Holder.
Take a drag off.
Yeah. When you really like a movie and someone else really doesn't, there's a you got to like listen to each other's opinions and stuff, and like be polite and stuff. But there's always that underlying tension.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're like really passionate about movies, and it's always like, oh, you didn't like that, huh? Like earlier, I was talking to someone who didn't like Hacksaw Ridge. Like,
I haven't seen that yet.
You didn't like Hacksaw Ridge? Oh, I love Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, I saw the review
for
great
it. Things about it.
I saw the review for it, and like the new Willamette, sometimes they shorten the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the review was, I don't know why. Why in the fuck did they nominate Mel Gibson for another Oscar? I think that was their review.
Oh, wow.
And he gave it a C.
Wow, like, really?
That's biased. That's biased, you know? And it's just like, why? Because what did he really do wrong? I know he's got an anti-Semitic father.
And he said pretty anti-Semitic things that were called.
Did he on his phone call thing with, like...
When the cop pulled him over, there was...
Oh, the cop reporting the cop
of, you fucking Jews!
Yeah, oh, God.
And then there's that phone... that someone brought their phone to Mel Gibson's house, and he was, like, screaming. It was fucking scary, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know what kind of pressure he was under, or what kind of... whatever the fuck.
I don't know. He's made some pretty damn good movies, though.
He has, but at the same time, I will say this. This is nothing against him. I'm just saying... sometimes when you analyze someone's performance record, look at all the stuff, he plays a lot of martyrs.
He does, though.
For someone to be anti-Semitic. I'm just talking about in terms of, like, you know, belief systems.
Well, I'll tell you this, that you might know this, but Hitler, Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm. Wait, there's not the other Hitler?
Eddie Hitler?
Springtime for Hitler in Germany.
Eddie Hitler from same difference.
Yeah.
British humor. Anyway, go ahead.
The top of the moment here.
Inflation.
Would you like a biscuit? He loved the Passion of the Christ. He would have that play done before me. He'd laugh his ass off because he loved watching Jesus get tortured. Loved it.
What?
And yeah, that's a fact.
Ah.
Well, it was a Jew, so of course he wanted to see.
I don't know how many times he watched it. I just know that it was. It's on record that he laughed his little mustache off.
Well, Jesus was a Jew, maybe.
Well,
was Christian. I've heard conflicting reports of that.
Jesus was a Jew. I knew a guy that would say Jesus, and I'm like I love the way you say Jesus, man. It reminds me so much. Like, you're saying this rabbi voice, and he's Jewish, so it wasn't like offensive or anything. Mm-hmm. He goes, "I have a speech impediment. Thanks for bringing it up." And I'm like, "Whoa, you could have played that so differently because I gave it as a compliment, motherfucker. Like, you don't try to make me feel bad. Nuh-uh. I didn't know you had a speech. I've known you for like over a year. I never noticed your speech impediment. I just thought you said things funny sometimes, and I thought you did it on purpose. I don't judge you. I thought it was cool.
I was a nice turn of phrase.
Yeah. He said Jesus, and I'm like...
I bet he doesn't have a speech impediment. He just said that to me.
I think that he's a little bit of a psycho. Yeah. But who knows? You know, people are people. That's a line from The Room, right? But, yeah. People are people. What can I say?
But Hacksaw Ridge is such a tonal shift. The beginning is like a Frank Capra movie. It's
no doubt.
Small town boy. It's very sweet. And the way Garfield acts, you'd expect Jimmy Stewart to play it if it was maybe 70 years ago.
Right.
He's like courting this nurse. I love you, and I want to be with you. I want to marry you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all sweet. And then a little bit down the line, you're watching soldiers just get riddled with bullets. It's the most violent war movie I've ever seen.
Oh my God.
Someone described the film as Frank Capra, Cecil B. DeMille, and Lucio Fulci all combined.
Oh, wow. That's dark. I thought you were going to throw in who's the Wild Bunch guy.
Leone, is that it?
It was one of those. The Wild Bunch.
I can't think of it. I know it's on the tip of my brain.
Not Ford, right? But
no, not at all. This guy did sheer gore.
What was his name?
And Shoot 'em Ups. Wild Bunch and Straw Dogs. But
Peckinpah.
I was going to say the long last name or the weird last name.
Sam Peckinpah.
Peckinpah. Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
It's got a couple of papas in there.
Super aggressive Vietnam era Shoot 'em ups. Yeah.
Straw Dogs is pretty violent. They made a remake of that, and you think, but why?
Mm-hmm. The original was actually, if you look at it, it's really dated.
Yeah, it is.
It's all about his wife's boobs, if you watch it. It's bizarre. It's like, she doesn't wear a bra, so it's like, oh, sexualizing the wife so that these creepy people can come and try to attack their house.
Right when she gets to the car, everyone kind of turns, and she's like, not wearing a bra.
Yeah.
Let's get her.
I'm oblivious. We're Americans. You can't touch us.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. And get Dustin Hoffman into a froth so he can go on a rampage. So that's pretty much Straw Dogs in a nutshell. I preferred Wild Bunch.
Wild Bunch.
Peckinpah was. He was pretty
fuck
brutal.
Fuck yeah. That's right. Okay. Brutal was in that.
Did he use a gun? And if he did he squeeze it too hard?
I have to watch it again.
Don't squeeze too hard. Don't squeeze so hard or don't squeeze too hard?
I think he said so hard.
But the other guy was yelling, don't squeeze too hard. Like, you're not even doing the quote right.
I think he was saying, don't squeeze so hard as well. It was,
excuse me.
But it was nuts. Like, kept turning into the, I think he was almost stalking us so he could say that one more time.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like it.
Don't squeeze so hard.
That's so funny.
I don't know if I've brought this up yet or not. I would like to.
My contract says I keep my clothes on.
Okay. Show us your dick, monitor. No, please don't.
It's radio, so it's huge.
Wow! That's quite a whopper. No, what I wanted to
do. And the crowd goes wild! Wow! Play the soundbite, everybody.
Why is
clapping.
My eye itching?
You can use that as a bat if you ever short one of that baseball. That was a lame joke. Peter J. Lewis.
Okay, I like the idea of batting with my dick. That sounds amazing. And then just a home run. And had you see the pecker on that man? Peck is kind of derogatory, I'd say, actually. It's not quite PC, not Pekka C, not Pekka K. Sorry, I'm done with the...
Peter J. Lewis is directing an adaptation of Clue.
I think it's pronounced Pecker J. Lewis.
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't done with it yet. He's, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Go again.
I don't know if he's going to be so happy that you called him Pecker J. Lewis, or maybe he'll be thrilled. I don't know. What do you think, Peter? Anyway, he's directing Clue for a production here. And you're going to be the lead? You're the butler guy?
I play Wadsworth.
What? That's his name, Wadsworth. Are you going to do the Curry voice or are you going to do a different approach?
I definitely have to do a voice because there's a moment in the play where they go, he goes, in the movie, he goes, no. And they go, no. And they repeat exactly the way he says something. So I have to figure something out. I have to have a voice. It doesn't have to be British, but I do know that it has to be mischievous. And I know why he smiles so much. It's just because it's as if he's contagious. He's like, I can't burst out laughing now. It's just, you idiots.
Oh, I had so many fucking geniuses in that thing.
Oh, my God. The all-star cast.
Yeah. The only thing I remember from that movie is communism's a red herring.
They say that a few times near the end. Yeah. No, and the very last one is communism was just a red herring. And he's just like, you know, they say it different every time. So I remember watching that scene. I watched it yesterday with Jeanette, and we were kind of breaking it down every now and then. And just that part in particular, I'm like, oh, you know, filming that and doing that, he probably had to say like, okay, will this be the last one? Right? If you put them all three together, you know, or what is it, you know? And so just knowing to say it different every time, anyway, you know, it was just. It's just a really brilliant breakdown of a performance. Mm-hmm. I'm not. None of us are going to do the Madeline Kahn or the Tim Curry or the Christopher Lloyd or any or this guy. His name is Lee Ving.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, Lee Ving from fucking Fear.
From Fear.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was talking to my cab driver last night, and he's like, Lee Ving from Fear? From the 80s band Fear? I'm like, yeah. He's like, from the punk rock band Fear? And I'm like, yeah. But like the reason why he played Mr. Body. In that, like the character Mr. Body, if you've seen the movie, you know that. Is he Mr. Body? Anyway, the point is his name is. There's a line we go, Mr. Body will be leaving soon, and his name is leaving. You know, it's just that's not his real name, I don't think. But that's like, but that had been his name for a while.
Up to
that
point. Like, who are you? I'm leaving.
Yeah, I suppose he would be leaving. So yeah, there has to be some. It's a little bit of Cockney in there, you know. It's a little bit, and I might have fun with that. I definitely have to do the smile because the smile is he's a mischievous character. He's like kind of like Puck, you know, just a little bit. He's just fucking with everybody the entire time.
And the casting is done now.
The casting is done. I could actually list it off.
What are the dates for this show?
In
March, right?
I think our first show is March 11th.
March 11th.
I think it's our preview, and then we're going to do it for two or three weeks. I think we're going to do it for 3 weeks, 4 shows a week. So we'll do 12 shows total, 4 shows a week through for 3 weeks. So it'll go until about the mid-April. Because it'll open a preview, and then a week later, I think it'll... fully open.
I gotcha.
It's about the 18th or so, or maybe a day prior. I don't know. You can find it on MrTheater.com. MISTER Theater, TheAter. Theater is spelled the same way as Mr. with the ER at the end. .com. MrTheater.com, and you can see all of our the calendars are all there. I would look it up right now, but my phone's a recording device, apparently.
True. And Peter, this is his first time directing a stage play?
I think that is correct.
I loved him. And he played the psychiatrist in the room. And
he played the first psychiatrist.
The first psychiatrist. The movie does this little switch thing because the actor ditched. You did the same thing in your play.
We did, and we almost got the original. So the person who played it was a guy named Phil Pompeo, I believe is how you say his last name. I don't think it has an M. I want to say Pompeo all the time, but I think it's Pompeo.
The actual psychiatrist in the movie.
Well, that's the person who played it in the play. So I wanted to give credit to him first for our stage adaptation.
Oh, okay.
And the actor that played the person that came in second, mm-hmm. Not to take another way, Peter was wonderful in that role. He was hilarious.
Oh, he was. I loved him.
There was one particular performance that where he was genius. Because he had a drink or two too much. And he was like, well, I'm psychiatrist, what do you mean? And I'm just like, it was the only time I ever really broke in the play. And like, I'm just like, well, that's your mind. You know? And God, it was just so, I was so mad at him. And yeah, it was still, it was too. Just so funny. And the scene where he went out there, he's like, so what's wrong, Mark? I'm psychiatrist. Tell me everything, what's wrong? Why you fight? Man. Why you gotta fight? Yeah. It was just amazing.
I'm gonna put him in a film now.
No, he's a wonderful, wonderful actor, and I think he'll be a very good director. Actually, I think he's got a good vision, so that's good.
Well, he spent his time watching directors, so I'm sure and like seeing what they do. So he probably knows very well how it works.
And he's also cast his two good buddies, myself and Ryan, and Jeanette in it as well. And so like you know we've been working on. I met Jeanette and Ryan. Excuse me, I met Ryan and Peter in 2009. Like the very first week and a half of living in Portland, I got cast in Ryan's play. Peter was in it. I remember Peter hated me the first time he met me. He was just like looking at me like give me the dirty eye. Like, I got a supernumerary role in that, and I showed up to every practice and get to know everybody there. This was tangenting off to somewhere else though. The character that came in for the room.
Mm-hmm.
That came in to play for the day or whatever he did. His name is Greg Ellery. That's the real actor who came in, who worked with Dylan here. Like they studied a lot in Chico together. They ran their theater together, right? I mean, I think that's a fun story, you know. But
small world.
So we might get him for the if we do this idea for bringing it back. We might inevitably get him for this rumor.
Wow! Yeah, he moved back to the West Coast. He wants to visit Portland soon.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd love to have him on the podcast if you'd want to.
Totally.
Damn.
I just acted with him last summer. I see him almost every summer in Chico because we do a show called The Butcher Shop that's been going on since the late 80s. Actually, it did have a time off. Like I think the last one was at 92. And some time went by and I was bored one night and I started pulling out the VHS and putting a bunch of stuff on YouTube, and all of a sudden everybody's like watching it and going, why aren't we doing this again? Why aren't we acting together anymore? It's like, because it's fucking two decades later. It's a whole generation, so we got to get together like it.
It's really
kind of, and put on shows.
It's really kind of amazing. If you, yeah. If you watch that character's performance, like I watched that guy Greg Ellery, and once I found that fact out that they had studied together and worked together, this is right. I mean, let's just go ahead and just say it's kind of like taking when Walken and Pacino and De Niro and what's his name? Oh God, oh fuck, I hate forgetting this guy's name. The dude that was in The Deer Hunter and Dog Day Afternoon and
Defoe.
And he was only in like four great movies, or maybe five. And he played Fredo.
Fredo.
It's John Cazale. That's his name. He was only in like five movies, and then he died of a brain cancer thing.
Fuck.
It was awful. But he was in five of the greatest movies made: Deer Hunter, and two of the Godfathers, and the one and two, and You Broke My Dog Afternoon, and then what was the other one? The Conversation. Very good sound movie.
Yeah.
They have a certain kind of. You see Pacino and you see some De Niro in there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when I was watching The Room, I could see Dillerman doing that role, like for that character and playing it like, you understand what you're doing? And it's like, ah, that's perfect. That's the way Dillerman might play. Like you're gonna bring him apart. Okay, you're destroying Johnny, and it's just like Dillerman kind of do it the same
way. That's
what's
funny about that. It's funny you say that because just last summer,
maybe he was playing you.
I was at a fucking party for The Butcher Shop, and Ellery comes up and is being introduced to Julia yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a moment where it was like we were talking about the old days and the '90s and just doing stuff at the Blue Room in California. And there was that moment where we were talking about like, yeah, the way it went, you know, how things laid out and over time, over the years. And then there was a moment where it was like, even Ellery was sitting there telling Julia, like, yeah, there was moments where it was like, okay, who do we get for this? Well, so-and-so's in L.A., and so-and-so's sick. So, I don't know, Ellery, Hillerman, whoever. There are certain people who could play certain roles, and we were always lumped in. And Ellery was one of the hardest workers of that theater. He did a lot more plays than I did there, for sure. But I was I started out as curator and admin. I was marketing, and you know, I would capture all the plays on camera for about a year before I had the guts to fucking show up and actually do an audition. And this is because I started out doing that as a kid, and was having this moment of like, nope, not acting here in play, not doing that. Fucking no one wants to see me on stage. I had this really negative attitude at that time. And so I basically, but at the same time, I admired all my friends for pushing forward and doing things. And so I would show up and just kind of like capture what they were doing. And after a while, I was like, what the fuck am I thinking? I'm going to get up there and do it too. This is great.
Yeah.
What they're doing is amazing. And so, you know, and I knew Ellery from Beyond Theater. It was just like
you were friends.
She was dating a girl who was roommates with another girl that I was, you know, not dating, but in love with. So we knew each other from just hanging out, you know, so.
That brings me to a question. I just thought of, he might be able to watch someone play him.
Go on.
He might be able to watch someone play him soon. They're making that Disaster Artist movie, the movie's called The Masterpiece, I think, about the making of The Room.
Mm-hmm.
James Franco's playing
Franco. Franco, yeah.
Is someone playing Ellery, or is...
Someone else played Ellery. In fact, Ellery did an entire audition tape. It's on YouTube. to try to get into that movie, and he kept saying, well, I should probably play this because I'm the guy who originated the role.
Wouldn't it be funny, though, if they had cast you to play it?
That would have been... amazing.
That would be so,
because I was in a James DeFranco movie right before. Oh, yeah.
Let's take a break.
Sure, cool.
This is Heavy Set Go.